some really exciting stuff with this particular exhibition because a number of the works have actually come from the Leslie Lohman Museum of Gay and Lesbian Art in New York. And that's the only LGBTIQ museum in the world, if I'm correct.
It is. There is a... It's the only art museum. And there are other LGBTQI plus A museums in the world, but this is an art museum, so it's the only one in the world. And it was established probably about 40 years ago in New York by Leslie and Lohman, two gay men.
And how did it come about you showcasing some of the pieces down under?
I've been putting this exhibition together for probably 2.5, 3 years or so, but I've been thinking it out for much longer. And I just approached them because I knew they existed and I knew they had an extraordinary collection. They got a collection of nearly 20,000 works of art. I went and met with them a couple of times, and their registrar, Brandon Wallace, we spent a whole afternoon going through hundreds and hundreds of photographs. He dragged them out and we did a selection, and that's how it came about. But they're exceptionally generous. I mean, they allowed us access to 64 works, which is about a quarter of the show came from America. And the reason we got them is because none of these works are physically available in Australia. So we bought works by, you may have, you're probably far too young to remember, a man called Peter Berlin, who was very big in the 70s and early 80s in creating sort of, it was very much a big gay icon at the time. So we brought works by him out to Australia.
And so for you as the curator, bringing some of these art pieces to put as part of this exhibition and also some local artists, how do you meld those two worlds together?
It's very much, the exhibition is not, it has works from 1856 right through to 2017. And in fact, we commissioned a number of works or artists made new works in Australia. And one of the things of doing it was I wanted to put the contemporary Australian works within a historical context. So you will find a Bill Henson next to a 1900 photograph by Baron von Gloden from Sicily. So to try and show across time how things can actually relate. So we've done them by a certain number of themes. There's a theme of classicism. There's a whole wall of something like 30 or 40 portraits of males. There's a section on the Auschwitz and what is happening to gay people in Iran. And it includes contemporary works by Liam Benson. There's a work on HIV/AIDS with works, obviously, William Yang's beautiful series on Alan Booth. And yet there's, in that section, there's an American artist called Callop Lindsay, who's sort of like a drag persona who does a very funny thing, which is about a song called Lollipop. So there's a mixture of contemporary pop classical works together. So there's Bruce Weaver's movie he made for the Pet Shop Boys of Being Boring is actually in the exhibition. So There's lots of contemporary references in the show.
Yeah. And it's kind of been written in that the images range from banal to the confounding. Can you kind of run us through that spectrum? What does that look like? What does that visual look like?
Well, one of the most extraordinary series of photographs in the exhibition, which is still confounds me to this day. In the 1960s in New York, there was a place up in the Catskills called Casa Susana. And this was a place where men went for a weekend to have a full bed and board for $25 and one makeup lesson.
Right.
These men defined themselves as heterosexual. They were highly homophobic. They couldn't stand trans people either. And they believed they would go and spend a weekend dressed as women. And we had these extraordinary photographs, which we borrowed from the Museum of Ontario in Canada, of these men. But one of the most extraordinary things is one of the people who went is a woman called Catherine Cummings, who works at the Gender Centre in Australia. And I knew Catherine when she was John Cummings. And she's now 82. So one of the, like, these images are really confusing because you just think, what headspace are these people actually in? Or do you know what I mean? Like, it really is confounding. And I suppose the banal is probably thing we've one of the wonderful things in the 19th century, because homosexuality wasn't really defined in Germany for the first time until the 1870s, and then went into England in the 1880s. Before that time, people didn't really define relationships. There was a greater sense of intimacy between men than we have today, though I think younger people are becoming much more intimate and allowing emotions to be done. So we did some research into a collection of Australian photographs called the Holtermann Collection, which was done in 1872 in Hill End. And we found these amazing double portraits of men being taken together. And it's obviously they were celebrating something. We're not saying what their gender is, but we're showing that there was an affectionate relationship between men, which is missing in today's society. And what we're also saying is the fact that it's very easy to judge what happened in the past by what our current morality actually is, or our ethics and things like that. But it doesn't necessarily always relate to things that happened historically some time ago. And the other thing about this show, which is different, because being an openly gay male, I've selected works which I like. So in some ways it's a bit of my favourite things, but that... But I've changed. Normally a curator is actually unknown. You actually don't, the gender or what their beliefs are doesn't actually come into the exhibition. And I've made it central to this exhibition. So there are artists in the show who are alive who are not LGBTIQ. So we have approached all of them, people like Bill Henson, and said, look, want to put your work in the show. However, this is the context your work is going to be seen in. Most artists were happy to be it. There was one artist who really never got back to us, and from the conversation I had, he was highly edgy about this way of actually putting the show together. So in that way, it's very different from a lot of other shows that have been done recently.
I guess that's one of the things that is probably weaved into the show in terms of the participatory aspect of it. So coming from this eye of a queer lens, audience members are going to interpret it in different ways. But the idea behind the show itself, The Unflinching Gaze, is to incorporate the male form and how that's changed over time.
Yeah.
When you were kind of curating this exhibition and coming up with the idea, so thinking about it for much longer, did you have an idea of what the male form is, and did you sort of have an understanding of how that had changed over time, or was this sort of as much of an education for you as it may be for people who are going along to see this show?
pardon me. I knew what I was wanting to do, and basically from the very beginning when I really started putting things together, the exhibition has remained pretty constant in terms of what I was trying to say. But what became sort of interesting is the fact that the male figure has changed. We have a beautiful photograph of a man, a bodybuilder called Tony Sansone from the 1935 period, which Charles Atlas, the bodybuilder, said he was the most beautiful man in the world. And he really is extraordinarily handsome. But he was a bodybuilder. You put him against a photograph of Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, who was a bodybuilder, and the difference is extraordinary in how we actually, our perception of the male figure has changed over a period of time. But there are certain things that are, like, pretty constant. There is still a strong emphasis on classicism. And it's very interesting in terms of the whole idea of the classic ideal, which was sort of promulgated by a man called Winckelmann, who in the 18th century, who started this whole idea of classicism and referenced back to Greece and to Rome, and that it is very interesting that that man was gay, or well, he had relationships with men, so didn't define himself as homosexual because that definition didn't exist. So he had relationships with men. And one of the fascinating things is he believed that all Greek art was white, because by the time he saw it, all the colour had come off it, and they were highly painted. So this 18th century man still has affected how we perceive, because we perceive classical art as white. when in fact it was highly coloured. So it's, we're still affected time-wise by things that have happened a long time ago, and interestingly, by gay men.
And the exhibition itself, interesting that it's held in Bathurst, and for us that's somewhat removed from our gay bubble here as Sydneysiders. What was the reason for holding it out of the city, and as well the reception of it down there?
I wanted to do it. I could see that it was never going to be done in Sydney. And in fact, in and because it's sort of like my swan song. It's the last exhibition I'm doing at Bathurst Region Art Gallery before I retire next year. And I thought, well, they can't actually fire me, can they? No. No, but the council has been remarkably supportive about the whole exhibition in every way. And the interesting thing has been there has been funding, getting funding for this exhibition has been incredibly hard. We got money from the Dobell Foundation, which was great. But we've had comments that it was said at some of the funding meetings by people who attended, which is borders on homophobic. One person on one panel who is a closeted gay male who basically said, we don't need to fund this because the council will close it down the next day. And that's a pretty appalling thing to say. So even though we think we've come enormous distances, we still very much, there is out there in the community, a sort of hidden homophobia, which still exists and people are still using it and that.